Welcome to the Dad Cave with my dad, Stephen Hayes.
And my dad, Mark Chester.
Welcome to The Dad Cave, a podcast brought to you by Care for the Family. And today we are talking about being a dad when you've lost your dad. But first of all, Stephen, how's your week been?
It's been reasonable. It's I'm pretty tired because our youngest, Lottie, is just choosing to wake up at kind of like middle of the night-ish. And whilst I can get her back to sleep, I can't get myself back to sleep. And I keep thinking, oh, I'm kind of out of the interrupted sleep phase. And then no sooner have I had that thought when suddenly either one of my children seeks to prove me wrong. But I'm kind of used to it, so it's all good. Yourself?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, I feel like actually I've gone back to parenting a young child again because we've just got a dog.
And that's right.
And she's a puppy, and so
what's her name, Mark?
She's called Jenny. She's a little cocker spaniel puppy, and I kind of feel like this is an opportunity to correct all my previous parenting mistakes. You know, I'm trying to get it right with Jenny finally.
And Jenny, then would that be after the great Jennifer Lopez?
No, she is named after somebody.
Okay, go on.
She's named after a donkey, actually. So I don't know whether you've seen the film Banshees of Inisherin.
I have seen that film.
There is a lovely donkey
in that
film. What
a film that is, by the way.
It's a fantastic film. And there's a lovely donkey in it called Jenny.
Yeah.
And our dog is named after that donkey.
You know, I think I read somewhere that the donkey had a different name in the script, but then the actual donkey was called Jenny and wouldn't listen to anything else.
Yeah.
So just went with it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a lovely character, that donkey. So we decided we'd have a dog named after a donkey. But she is quite challenging. She's sleeping well, so that's good.
Have you had the puppy blues? Because that's a thing that can happen, isn't it? They chew everything up. They bark in the night. Have you had much of that?
We did. For the first few weeks, we found it really difficult to adjust. But absolutely loving it. Still challenging, but loving it. What's really interesting is that my kids, one of them in particular, was desperate for a dog when they were younger. And now I've exposed who that child is.
Yes.
He even did a PowerPoint presentation to try to convince us to have a dog.
What?
Now, we didn't get a dog until they both left home.
So, when did he do a PowerPoint presentation?
Oh, he was very young. I don't know, about 12 or something
good grief.
Like that. And but I think they are questioning, why did we wait until they'd left home to have a dog when they wanted one all along?
Because anyway, you were too busy raising them, I suppose.
I think that probably was it, yeah. Too tired to introduce anyone else into the household.
Well, this is a role reversal then, because I've got the old dog, I've got the 10-year-old dog, and I'm kind of been there and done it, so I can now start passing some wisdom on to you. But Mark, every episode now, I present you with one of the dad lemmas I've had within the last week.
Yes.
And this one's all around how you deal with unforeseen tantrums. Mm. So we've just celebrated the 2-year anniversary of Chicken Nugget Day. And I can promise you, if you enter my phone right now and search chicken in my diary, Chicken Nugget Day will come up. So this is the day that we'll probably commemorate every year now, where Imogen had potentially the biggest tantrum I think she might have ever had, and everything was fine. There was peace, there was still, there was harmony in the household. Beck served up her dinner, chicken nuggets as they can be, quite hot when they come out of the oven, and Beck did the unthinkable and she cut them in half. And what ensued was it was somewhere between 40 minutes and an hour of bedlam. Absolute bedlam. She was throwing stuff, she was kicking, it was crazy. And we couldn't do anything to, there's no more chicken nuggets there, so we couldn't cook more. And it was so wild how much of an overreaction she had. And then I basically thought I'd cracked it and I calmed her down. And what I'd done is I'd used cocktail sticks in the middle to then just slide the two chicken nuggets back together. And I said, look, Daddy's fixed it. And then she finally calmed down. And then, lo and behold, she realized what I'd done. And then that made her even more cross. And it kind of started all over again. And I think it's probably one of the few times she's had to go to bed without any food, because she just had to sleep it off.
Wow.
It was absolutely hilarious. But in the moment, you're thinking, how did we get it? How did it escalate so quickly?
Do you know what I love about that story? The lengths that we will go to keep our kids happy when they're young. You actually put chicken nuggets back together with cocktail sticks.
Yeah, more for me for trying to reason with a...
See, I can identify with Emmy over that, to be honest, because you know when you go to a cafe...
You can empathise with Emmy?
I love Emmy. She's great. And when you go to a cafe, all day breakfast, you order your all day breakfast and it comes and they've slopped the beans on the plate and it's just seeping into everything else.
Oh, yeah, especially when it interacts with the yolk.
I hate baked beans. Right. And I feel like having that kind of tantrum when that happens.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I'm 53, so... I can't do that. I've got to keep it inside.
It's an inner tantrum.
But I will be raging for 40 minutes as well. So yeah. I just think Emmy's being very honest and letting her feelings out.
Yeah, well, good for her. Yeah. So this episode, Mark, we recorded a podcast with a guy called Phil Knox, all about friendship, and that's gone out. But in that podcast, he mentioned losing his father, and it seemed like there wasn't enough in that first podcast to really tease out what it was like for him going through that. So we asked him to stick around, and he was good enough to do that. So that's what we did, isn't it? We recorded another unprepared podcast straight after. And so we're going to listen to that, and then we'll come back and it's been a few weeks since we did that recording, and there's certainly a few things that have resonated with me and kind of things I've found myself doing since then. So should we listen to that now? And we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dad Cave, Phil. And you've been in here before because we did one on friendship, and you wrote a book on friendship called The Best of Friends. So we talked about friendship, but in the book and in the podcast as well, we talked a little bit about your dad.
Yeah.
And we wanted to invite you back because we wanted to explore being a dad when you've lost your dad. Mm. And you lost your dad when you were quite young. So could you tell us a bit about that, please, Phil?
Yeah, not as young as some. I was 21. And so for me, an amazing relationship with my dad, absolute hero of mine, grew up kind of, you know, in some ways wanting to be like him. He was an amazing dad. I think sometimes probably as I've got older, you realise he wasn't perfect, but I probably thought for most of my life he was just the absolute perfect dad, a really good relationship, and so grateful for that. But for me, there was a moment when I was studying law at university, Sheffield. I was having lunch with my mum. Phone rings, it's a family friend, and she says some words I'll never forget, tore my world apart. She said, "Phil, I'm really sorry, but this morning your dad has died." And it was completely out of the blue. We had no idea anything was wrong, and he'd collapsed, had a heart problem, and had an aneurysm. And you know that in that moment, in that October, my world was dramatically changed. And you know, even worse, I was opposite my mum, had to tell my mum, you know, you sit opposite this woman who's been married to dad for 25 years. It was really hard. That's what happened.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. And that's just such a tough thing to get through. And then obviously then you become a dad yourself.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference, doesn't it? I mean, how did it impact you when you became a dad yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I think the moments I miss my dad most are when really brilliant things happen. I think there are moments when, you know, you want, I think all of us need someone to say, "I'm really proud of you." And for a lot of us, the person who that means the most coming from is your dad. And so for me, I think the pride of, you know, the pride of me having, we now have our two boys, those have been the moments where I've kind of missed dad. Mm. The most, I remember when our first son was born, you know, the first phone call is to mum, but was acutely aware in that moment that we're only telling one parent. So that was a big deal. I think there was also another real moment actually the night dad died, where, you know, obviously you just gradually coming to the realization in what's happened in the last kind of 12, 24 hours. And again, linking in with the theme around friendship, what happened the night dad died was my best mate came to come to be with me. And I remember, you know, you can't sleep. Your world is churning. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. We both sat in the kitchen together, and various waves of emotion are just coming over me. And I remember in particular just this painful moment of realization where something just erupted within me of grief around realizing my dad would never meet my future wife if I got married, or any future children. And that moment of realization was just incredibly memorable and painful. I could picture where I was, you know, what I was wearing, and just my mate being with me in that moment. But that was, yeah, that was another key moment, really. And I think when you lose your dad at a young age, before various things have happened in your life, you inevitably project forward and go, wow, that's not how you expected life to be.
So it's something that most people go through, losing a parent. But I think, especially if you've got a good relationship with your parents, it's hard to come to terms with that reality and almost imagining what that must feel like, that parental figure that's been a constant your whole life is no longer around. Even, you know, for a lot of people listening who still have to go through that, it's kind of like, what is it like? Like, what do we have to go through when this happens?
Yeah, grief's a really funny thing. Not a fun thing, it's a funny thing. And I think it's been very different. I've actually lost both parents. So just over 3 years ago, my mum sadly died. And the deaths were very different. And so my mum's death was kind of, she had cancer, and over a period of about kind of 6 to 9 months, we kind of journeyed that through. And then there's a moment where you find out the cancer's terminal, and then that gradual journey towards death. With dad, it was very different. And I think probably that both journeys are very different. Those who've walked through the death of a loved one in those various stages will probably recognize that. Whereas with dad, it was, you know, it's an immediate car crash, and therefore all the emotions come out kind of into something all at once because it is so sudden. I think also probably being aware of your age within that. So I was, you know, 21, you know, not, you know, still developing emotionally in terms of maturity and your capacity to deal with stuff. And so I think the acute pain at that age is probably far different to me at kind of whatever it was, 30, 37, when mum died, and that kind of much more gradual, you kind of hold that slightly differently, I think. But I think it's close to physical pain in terms of what it feels like. It's an outpouring of emotion. It's I think people talk about a range of emotions. There's a bit of denial in there. There's a bit of it gradually seeping on into you, the reality of what's happened. But it's, again, to some extent, in a funny way, I turned 40 this year. In some ways, it's having got that out the way, almost all of us will know our parents die at some stage in our lives. And almost to kind of having gone through that pain barrier, is in some ways a bit of a relief because you're knowing, actually, I've only had two parents. I'm not going to go through that again because it is traumatic. It is hard. And, you know, for me, two things have got me through both the deaths of my parents, and faith. I'm a person of faith, and that's really helped. And also friendship. Those who are around you in that time, you know, those are the two things, the two factors that have most strongly got me through those times.
After you lost your mum, were there ever moments when that strong feeling flooded in of, I've got no parents?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. And all that, because I'm the oldest of two as well. So I felt I'm the eldest of three. I've got two. So I've got a younger brother and younger sister. Almost feel a bit kind of the man of the family. Do you know what I mean? You feel like the kind of the head of the household in a weird kind
of. Like the baton's being passed on.
Yeah, exactly. It's really weird.
Quite a heavy baton, mind.
But I think there is something about being an orphan. That initially also very destabilizing, you know, the structures, the scaffolding, if you like, around your life, some of that's gone. I think also in terms of wisdom, looking up to parents, you know, I think naturally most of us talk to our mum or dad about what to do in various situations. That's not there anymore. And my aunt actually said, you know, when you lose your parents, actually, it's a real moment where you grow up. And I think that's probably been true. Over the last few years, in terms of kind of maturity and working out, you don't have that security in the same way you did.
Yeah. Yeah, we lost my father-in-law a couple of years ago, my mother-in-law 4 months ago, and one of the most poignant moments I remember is being on a walk with my wife Sue, and just stopping and saying, "I've got no parents," and that dawn of that realization of that was very, very strong, and it struck me that you're not just losing the person, which is a massive loss. You're losing the relationship as well. Yeah. And that sounds like stating the obvious, but there is something different about that. There's the relationship with a parent that goes.
And we've lost something, I think, in our modern day society around the wider family as opposed to the nuclear family. Thinking probably in recent years, certainly in the Western world, the nuclear family has become far more important in some ways than the wider family. So back to your question about what it's like to have a son and not have a dad around. Actually, you know, the grandparents, you know, and again, for both of my boys, my father-in-law is also not around anymore. And so both of my boys are growing up without a grandfather figure. And that's another dynamic kind of within that, and again the realization of that as someone who I grew up through my teens with two amazing grandfathers, knowing that my boys don't grow up with that is really painful. And therefore what we've had to find within our kind of wider community and wider relationships is grandfather-like figures. No one could ever replace the kind of the biological grandfather figures, just like no one can replace the father figure for my biological dad. Had to find within the wider community those grandfather-like figures to be those guys for my, you know, kids.
My wife's dad passed away at the end of 2021, and I think part of the grief seems to be, it's a whole bunch of things, because it seems to be the things you just took for granted, like being able to send a text to your parent and them being at the other end of that phone, and then the next day they're never going to reply again. Things like that, I think, seem to affect Beck, my wife. I think then just waves of little reminders of things that might come from nowhere. But I think one of the things that's been the hardest, almost unpredictably, is that loss of one, being proud, my wife being proud of our kids, and for her dad not to see part of their development, things they do that he would have found hilarious, that we just know he would have loved, but also trying to explain to them, why is granddad not around anymore? So how, with your kids, at what point did you try to navigate that and explain to them, well, I had a dad, but he's just not around anymore? Like, how did that conversation work?
Yeah, I think we've tackled it really full on, actually. So we talk about grandpa and grandma, and you know, my kids know they were called Martin and Janet, and there's photos around the house, and beautifully, actually, and this is a really good thing to do if you're friends with someone. So my parents, kind of friends, you know, recently a really good friend of my dad's brought around a photo of him that day, and in a frame, just to say, we've just found this the other day. And then, of course, you know, really, it's a really emotional moment for you to see this beautiful picture of your dad.
Yeah.
But also then to show that to the kids and say, this is your grandpa, this is what he looked like. And so, and I think it's different for different stages. So I've got a 10-year-old who grasps that a little bit more, and he was, how old was he? He would have been 7 when his grandma died, and he was, he kind of coped with that, I guess a 7-year-old will, and but probably won't remember very much of him spending kind of quality time kind of with her. But I think stories are really important, talking about the family stories. I read a beautiful stat about how the children who are most stable in life and grow up being the most stable and most able to weather the storms emotionally and mentally through life are those who have the greatest sense of their family history. Isn't that beautiful? So actually telling stories. And I remember for me growing up, you know, hearing stories from my mum and dad about the family I was part of. Those provide a bit of that kind of scaffolding and stability. Sociologically, it's proven that that's what happens. So I think we're very keen to really tell stories about how, you know, the good and maybe sometimes the bad of my mum and dad. And that's really important. But so I think I would say to people who've lost dads, tell stories, and really honour them within those stories. But don't shy away from that with your kids.
Yeah.
They will have to deal with it at some point and tackle it head on.
Yeah.
And how about talking about the death itself? Because culturally, we're a bit reluctant sometimes, aren't we, to confront the issue of death with anybody, let alone children. And sometimes we feel like it's our job to protect them from that and not to talk to them. How have you confronted that with your children?
Yeah, we've probably not just because of their age. We've not, you know, I'm not sure Caleb, our 10-year-old, has asked about it, but I think we will at some point. I think as he gets older, you know, again, we really won't shy away from that. And the other thing within that is that we'll have to talk about is that it was a heart condition that's hereditary, which I have, and he possibly has. You know, we're really praying that's not kind of passed on to his generation. But at some point, he will have to go for a heart scan to see if he's got the same heart. So that will be an inevitable moment, which kind of brings up that topic.
When did you find that out, Phil?
When I was about 30. Okay. So I think they basically said, you know, they said when Dad died, you'll need to have a scan at some point. And that was disconcerting, you know, it brings concern. And I guess also as a dad, one of the things that's probably most affected me is knowing the pain that I had to go through as a 21-year-old, just desperate, you know, you desperately don't want your kids to go. You want to protect your kids from pain at all costs almost, don't you, sometimes? Yeah. And knowing that journey that I've been on, desperate for my kids not to go through that, certainly not at the stage of life. You know, one of the prayers that I pray almost as a person of faith is God, let me live long enough to see my grandchildren, right? I want to get to that stage where I don't leave my kids to survive. I think, but what I'd say is that I'm testament to the fact that you can come through those situations. Mm. And again, as a Christian, I would say God has really helped me through those times, along with friends, along with the family and the relationships that I have around me. But So I think that to being diagnosed with that condition, and there've been moments where I've been, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night, you're not thinking straight, your heart's pounding, and the worry I have is not about dying, me dying, the worry I have is what I leave behind, knowing the impact that that's had on me.
Does that change the way you said about, you know, telling stories, and that's a way you bring them into the present and keep their memory alive? Has that changed how you think about your own legacy?
I think what it does do, it makes me even more determined to be a really good dad and a good person, I think, probably, because I think for me, I reflect on the fact that I'm grateful that I had an amazing dad for 21 years of my life than a dad who I grew up resenting or was a challenge or was abusive or whatever for longer, you know. Just quantity is not necessarily always a good thing. I think I'd rather, you know, you reflect, if you gave me a choice every single time, I would choose the dad I had for 21 years over anybody else, you know, for longer. Mm. And I think for me, that inspires me to want to be the kind of dad and almost kind of, you know, follow in those footsteps, but also model something of parenting, you know, I really hope and pray my kids have kids that I can grandparent, and I hope that in some ways I can, in the way that I father, I pass on some kind of wisdom, hopefully, probably some mistakes as well, to my kids in terms of, but so I think there's a bit of you treasure them, you treasure each day, because you know, look, life is short and life is fragile. Yeah. I think probably plays into a bit of that as well.
Are the things that your dad did that you've intentionally tried to do with your kids because you identified them as really good things to do?
That's a good question. Probably take them to sporting events. I think about some fond memories. My dad, I'm sure you can tell, I'm a bit of an enthusiast for life, and I get a bit rowdy on a football terrace. You know, I think probably I'll pick up that from my dad, who would, you know, that would be one case. I think the other thing is, you know, we were just talking off air about Scotland. My parents would go to Scotland, the long journeys. I'd say, it's just a really superficial, trivial one. One thing my dad did, I'd sit in the back seat behind the driver. driver's seat. And just occasionally, right, my dad, while we're driving up the M6, probably illegal, but, you know, he'd reach round, one hand on the steering wheel, the other hand kind of round, I'd just squeeze my leg. Do you know what I mean? Just a really affectionate little, you know, little father-like squeeze. I'd do that with my kids. Do you know what I mean? And that's just little things like that. Do you know what I mean? You know, that are really like, you know, and we're also quite a tactile family. So I really remember one of the really fond memories of my dad was him, you know, he was a really high flying lawyer. But also one of the really inspiring things about my dad is that he was a really wealthy man on a crazy amount of money. We could have lived in most houses in Birmingham, but he felt really called to live amongst the poor. So felt he chose to live as a family on a council estate. That was really inspiring because he felt that was that was the right thing to do and serve the in a really poor community. Yeah. And so he'd come home and he could have had really like expensive clothes, but he wore like really cheap coat basically. But I'll always really remember him coming home from work, you know, as a lawyer, you know, tired and, you know, beaten up by a day, you know, and he'd come in through the door and just, you know, I'd kind of bound towards him and he to me and have a hug. I think, so that almost like tradition of, you know, come through the door, big hugs. That's probably a really kind of positive thing that I've kind of picked up and carry on.
Yeah, yeah, they're beautiful examples. Yeah. Oh, dads do have a huge impact on us, don't they?
Yeah.
I remember doing a parenting course with a group of guys and I'd set aside about 20 minutes and the session was just to talk about the impact their fathers had had on them. Mm. And it was so naive to set aside 20 minutes because, boy, these guys want to talk about their dads. And there were all sorts of different dads in the room. You know, there were those who had good dads. There were others who had who didn't have good memories of their dads. One who had an alcoholic father, one whose dad left the home when he was very young.
Yeah.
And there was a real mixture of experiences. But 2 hours later and they were still all talking about their dads. And
beautiful.
And I think what crystallised it for them at that point was that they were dads themselves of young children.
Mm.
And they wanted to learn from their experience of their dads, the things that it would make them do well and the things that they wanted to avoid doing. Because none of us is perfect, are we? And so there are always things we think, actually, I'd like to do that, but not that.
Right.
And
just make different mistakes.
Just make, yeah,
yeah,
just
yeah,
make
exactly,
different,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there must be so many things as well that kind of play into the memory. Because I'm just thinking then, you know, my dad's a sports massage therapist and I'm incredibly injury prone. And I've had to...
You're his best subject.
Honestly, I had to stop running because I broke my ankle so many times. Then I switched to, I'll just do heavy weights, but then I injured my arm. And then I was like, swimming's like really low impact. And a couple of weeks ago, I injured myself swimming. I did front crawl, pulled my tricep and like one of the muscles between my ribs. But I can always go to my dad and say, Dad, can you try and figure this out? And there'll be
Does he charge you?
Fortunately not, no. I've probably saved a couple of grand on the amount of times I've been injured. But it's just occurring to me, like there'll be a day where I get injured and that just won't be a thing I can do anymore.
Yeah.
And given how often I get injured, that'll be a almost daily reminder. And there must be so many things that just wash over you when you're not expecting them, little things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I said, really, it's when things go well. Actually, I really miss my dad the most. Mm. I think, and moments I need wisdom. So, you know, things like, you know, I remember my wedding day being mostly sweet, but a bit bitter because he wasn't around. Yeah. Birth of kids, when kids do well at stuff. You know, little moments where you say to your kids, you know, your grandpa would be so proud of you.
Yeah.
You know, miss almost, you know, and he was very kind of, you know, kind of physical, would have been great, kind of wrestling with him, you know, even into his kind of 60s, you know, those moments. But also moments of wisdom. Like, there's loads of stuff I just don't know about and would love to kind of, you know, would love his advice and stuff and situations that happen. And you kind of like, what, you know, what would Dad advise me to do here? Those moments really, you know, make a difference.
And one of the things that came to mind when you were saying about the good moments, I reminded me of, do you know the Script, the band?
Yeah.
And there's a song, If You Could See Me Now. So I think, well, one of the band might be the main singer, Danny O'Donoghue, I think his name is. But he's written one of their songs is called If You Could See Me Now.
Yeah.
And it's about him being on the stage and the fans, like, would you stand, take a bow if you could see me now?
Yeah.
And it's really powerful. And so can you talk about, like, what would be the standout moment where you felt proud of something you had done or something that where you really felt that and what that looked like?
I mean, some goals I've scored playing football. I wish my dad was still on the side of the pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, I think probably it's a lot of family moments, actually. You know, I think, as we touched on the beginning of the podcast, I've loved being an author. We launched the Best of Friends early this year and had over 300 people at the book launches. I really would have loved my mum and dad to be kind of in the audience for those. That would have been really lovely. But I think it's the moments for me, probably most. It's been the Christmas dinner tables. You know, I guess the kind of, if you could see me now, you know, me being a dad trying to do my best with my kids, you know, you certainly don't get it all right all the time, but you know, you hope your parents think you're a good dad, right? You know, I think. Actually, I guess for me, it is those kind of Christmas dinner tables when you kind of all sat around and I think also, I wonder whether there is also this sense in which grandparents look around and go, I'm so proud of the parent that I've made my children to be, in terms of, because that's, in some ways, that's the best gift you give, isn't it, in some ways, to your kids, to help them do what you've done in their primary role to them. I think that's probably those are the kind of standout moments for me, probably.
Yeah. I'm just wondering whether there are any regrets after your dad died about things maybe you would have liked to have asked or done with him, or because one of the things I think about, my dad's still alive, but when he does die, are there things that I'm going to regret? Are there things that I need to do now to avoid those regrets? Do I need to ask some questions? Do I need to do some things? And I'm just wondering whether you ever felt any of that, Phil.
Not immediately. I think in some ways I wish I'd been better behaved as a child and a teenager. Genuinely. So this is really fun. When my mum died, obviously there's a bit of warning when someone dies of cancer. And I remember just like sitting with my mum in a few of her last days. And we're just chatting and kind of, having these really like emotional chats with mum about, you know, talk about your memories kind of growing up, wanting to kind of just have these last chats. And she said, and then we get to about childhood and she says, Phil, you weren't easy. I was like, thanks, mum. Nice little dying words.
And that's probably the gracious answer.
Yeah, exactly. So I think probably, you know, and funnily enough, she didn't say that to my brother and sister. No, it's fine. But I think in some ways the regrets actually was like, I wish I'd been better behaved. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't kind of off the rails. I think, as I said, I had an incredible relationship with my dad in loads of ways.
Yeah.
And I do think he was really proud of me. And again, coming back to that pride piece, like I read that the mother can provide almost every role in the parent in terms of kind of the function of a parent apart from bestowing pride. There's something about a father's pride, a dad's pride in their kids that only the dad can provide. And I think probably my deepest regret probably would have been if I didn't feel my dad was proud of me. But I do think he died at a time when I thought he was proud of the man I was becoming.
Yeah.
And again, there's real emotional moments now where, you know, people say to me, friends or whoever, you know, some people who never even knew dad, but know me, go, your dad would be so proud of you. Oh, those are the moments, you know, those are the moments. And just on the pride thing as well, you know, as I said, there's no substitute for my biological dad, but I need father-like figures who can, you know, and there've been moments where I've done stuff and those kind of mentor like figures in my life have kind of put their arms around me and said, I'm really proud of you, mate, for what you've done. Those moments mean the world.
And how do you show that pride to your kids? Yeah, what kind of things do you do for your kids?
And that's what I'd say, as we're on a podcast for dads. If you're a dad and your kids make you proud, for goodness sake, tell them. You know, for goodness sake, there is no one else can do for your kids what you do for them when you say, I am proud of you. Mm. And so I think so often, you know, I'd probably say it too for my kids because I'm aware of it. They're probably bored of it, you know, of me going, I'm really proud of your son, you know. Hopefully that's doesn't, I manage that well.
That will stay with them.
You hope so, don't you? And, but yeah, so I think for me, you know, even like we were joking just before the podcast, you know, my 4-year-old's just learned to be able to kind of get up the frame of the door. You know,
and so
only,
proud
only,
of you.
Only for once. But I was. Yeah. Like, literally, and I'd text my wife back. She sent me a photo. I was in London. She takes a text photo and she says, she sent me this photo. I said, can we, you know, tell Joss he's made my day. And she did, you know.
I think
that's what I'd say to dads. Don't, if your kid do something that make you proud, for goodness sake, tell them.
And as we come into land, Phil, what would you say for the people listening who perhaps, you know, their dads are alive and well and they've never experienced that. But what would you say in terms of, you said there was men who have done that for you.
Yeah.
What would your encouragement be for guys in that space in terms of, you know, should we be striving to be father figures to those who don't have that?
Yeah. I think we should always be on the lookout for those that we can invest in a father-like way. And it's back maybe to that kind of that interesting thing that's happened in society around the kind of the elevation of the nuclear family over the wider community. You know, there's a beautiful saying, isn't it, that it takes a village to raise a child. And I think we've lost a bit of that maybe in the UK and the Western world. And so I think that moment of like looking out for those who need fathering. And so again, in our family, my brother-in-law sadly died a few years ago. And so I've got two nephews who don't have a dad around. And I'm not, I don't think I'm the best at it, but I'm always trying to kind of, you know, not replace their dad, but try and find little moments of kind of hanging out. And actually now and again, really proud of you, actually. Mm. You know, and trying to provide example, trying to find encouragement, trying to find some shared experiences. So I do a bit of water skiing with one of my nephews now, and try and find those moments. You know, my brother-in-law, who is also the uncle of one, you know, taught our nephew to shave recently. Do you know what I mean? Those little moments where I think many people are growing up in a bit of a fatherless world. If we can provide that for those around us, not in a way that oversteps boundaries, but in a really beautiful way in our communities, that can be really helpful.
To close, like, what would be one of your favourite memories of your dad, just to kind of wrap up our time?
Yeah, I think loads of fond memories, often around sport. But I think for me, I will profoundly remember the day before my dad died, where I was at university in Sheffield. I was a really keen footballer, and he came to see me play football. And Dad was a really high-flying lawyer, very busy man. And he spent the whole of the first half on the phone to the government office, advising the highest levels of government on housing policy. And then he gets off the phone. But while he was doing this very important task, he was also watching the flaws in our formation. And so at half time, basically came over and told us what we were doing wrong and why the other team had scored when they had. And so I'll always remember that really amazing balance and juggling act that dad was able to do, but also the kind of the pride of that. So that was a really fun memory, and that sense of just being really interested in me alongside that pride he provided.
Phil, it's been so good of you to come into the Dad Cave again and share what is a very personal story. We really do appreciate it. We know it'll help a lot of people to listen to. And what strikes me is that your dad's is still living on in you as you parent your children. So it's grandfather and father together parenting the next generation. So, Phil, thanks so much for joining us again in the Dad Cave.
Thanks, gents.
Cheers, mate. So that was really powerful, hey Mark. I mean, I think in the moment we really just felt the kind of how raw that emotion can be, and not having that frame of reference yet myself, kind of unlocked for me, oh, this is kind of something that's coming down the road, and I've never really given it all that much thought. How about you?
Yeah, I think there was one moment when the emotion behind it really sort of hit me as Phil was talking. And that's when he said about when his son was born, and he could only make a phone call to his mum to say that he'd become a dad. And I just found that point really quite emotional. You know, that the sense of loss around that. And I guess there are lots of, when you lose somebody, there's lots of moments when you sense their loss. But actually then when you're fulfilling their role, if you like, you're being a dad when they were a dad to you, and you can't phone them up anymore and say, well, I've just become a dad. It really kind of hit me hard, really.
Yeah. And another thing I've found, and I think something that's kind of nice about
being able to kind of bookend the actual interviews and not necessarily right in the moment is kind of hearing our guests at almost like an audience member, and hopefully what will be happening for other people as well, actually being able to take things on board from the discussion. So I, within the last 2 weeks, had two instances actually where I realized I'd taken stuff on board with, and I only really realized it in the aftermath. So I was with my dad, and he plays saxophone to a certain standard, which wouldn't necessarily be all that high, but he plays saxophone, and he dug out his dad's saxophone, and he was playing it, and I had my youngest, who's two, Lottie, and she kind of was looking at it flabbergasted, not quite, like almost a little bit scared, but almost a little bit intrigued. And I'm not a massive one to like, I like to be in the moment, but I did think I'm going to take my phone out and just record her watching it, then record my dad, and then like flip back around to her. Wow. Because I thought, I don't think I've got any video with them together. And I thought, oh, this is kind of a moment to not really just lose in the ether. I thought, I want to kind of capture this. And I'm not sure I would have done that had we not done that episode. And the other thing was, we've been away, and I kept when I could safely, like I reached around, tickled Immy, and when it was like on Lottie's on the other side, and I tickled her a few times, like at traffic lights and stuff. And I didn't even realize it. But then when I watched back over the interview, I was like, oh man, I got that from Phil, because his dad reached around and squeezed his leg, and that's where I've got it from. And I didn't realize it in the moment, but I've done that a few times on car journeys now with the girls, and they both find it hilarious. So it's not the exact same thing, but I kind of took that on. It's kind of seeped in. I took it on board, and I kind of think that's kind of what we want out of these discussions, for some of what's discussed, even if it's one thing, to actually impact how people interact as fathers.
That is the good thing about chatting and being open about being dads, isn't it? That we do get ideas from one another.
Yeah.
Do get techniques and strategies and just ideas for doing little things like that. I loved what you said about the sense of family history and about keeping that going, and that children, if they've got a sense of family history, are better able to sort of navigate the storms of life. I found that a really good point. And it just made me realise the importance of telling stories. So my grandparents had all died before I became a parent myself. My parents are still alive, but my grandparents had died. But we often tell the kids stories about those grandparents. And I really liked it that Phil sort of confirmed that that's a really good, healthy thing to do. That's helping our children if we tell stories. Of course, in some families, people might not have those positive stories about particular people. But those that do, or anybody in their family that they can tell those kind of stories about, it's important to have that sense of family history. And maybe even if, you know, not everything's good, it's just to be honest about what the family background is like, really.
No, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it, and I hope people listening did as well. And so we're running out of time now, Mark. So we've got just enough time to do our dad jokes for this week.
Yes.
So, if people aren't aware, we get scored by our producer, Lindsay. A weak joke will get crickets, a mediocre joke will get a mediocre applause, and a good joke will get rapturous applause. I'm happy to go first, Mark.
Please do.
Okay.
Fire away.
I don't think we're going to do very well here. All right. I'm trying to convince my dad to get a new hearing aid, but he just won't listen. All right.
A mediocre joke?
A mediocre joke.
I've never seen someone so delighted to have told a mediocre joke before.
My dad does have a hearing aid, and still, he often doesn't seem to listen. All right, Mark, over to you.
So on topic for this episode, we have a new dog. And our dog is great at maths. I asked her, what's 2 minus 2? She said nothing.
Yes. Oh.
Not even a mediocre joke.
Okay, so that makes us even on the scoreboard. So that's 1 point for a mediocre joke for me, nothing for you.
This, well, yes, it's a thrilling league though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they might write stories about it in years to come. Who can say?
Yeah.
Who can say? So thanks, everyone, for checking out this episode. Thanks for being with us. And Mark?
Yeah, really enjoyed it. And thanks for listening.
See ya.
The Dad Cave podcast was brought to you by Care for the Family. If you're a Care for the Family partner listening, thank you so much. The support we give wouldn't be possible without you. If you're listening to this and you're not a partner, but you'd like to join the thousands of people who are standing with us monthly, you can do that at cff.org.uk/donate. And as a thank you, we'll send you a pack of resources for you and your family. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.